Thank you very much for that. That was the live version, of course, of the Guess Who's Hand Me Down World. Such an appropriate song to play. Joining me in the chair now for the last hour of the drive time, Rob Washburn. Rob, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Dave. It's great to be part of this beehive of democracy.
Beehive of democracy. Well, and you know what? We don't worry about neonicotinoids here in this beehive, that's for sure. We're going to talk about CCTV cameras in the downtown. Now, I did put a call out to Chief of Police Kai Liu yesterday. It might have been a little short notice, but I didn't hear back from him. And we are going to talk about something that I think is probably very important to him as well as the Chief of Police.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk to you today about the installation of the new cameras and in the downtown. Now, there was some local media, a special story on the arrival of two new cameras that are being located, one at Division and King and the other one at George and King, which are added to the already existing two cameras, which one's down in the Coburg Beach and the other one is on Swain Street.
That's right.
So it just fascinating. I mean, there was quite interesting. First of all, the cameras cost about $10,000 to $12,000, but they are paid for by the provincial government under the Civil Remedies Grant. And then the money that's generated by the police services, which they said in the story that it was the business revenues. But I believe that's a lot of that comes from the background checks that the Coburg Police does.
That's right.
So that's what covered the cost for each of the two cameras. So really an interesting thing to talk about, I think, because what we're talking about here is you know, surveillance and privacy. And it seemed to me when I was looking through the research that a lot of people in the downtown support the arrival of the cameras.
Well, as you may be aware, there was a rash of break-ins recently in the downtown.
Yep.
And a number of stores were hit. Now, there wasn't a whole lot of stuff taken and some damage done to some of those properties. But I guess the word from those business owners is, you know, where first of all, why aren't the police out of their cars walking their beat? And secondly, you know, do we have surveillance cameras? And if we do, why weren't they operating at the time?
Well, I understand from the stories that have been published that there was a storm that knocked out the system, and that was part of it. But I guess more to the point, Dave, is why is it the public's responsibility or the police's responsibility to provide security for these businesses? I mean, shouldn't they be having a security system in their store? And why do we need these cameras up particularly?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, part of it, I'm sure, is the logic that, you know, you were mentioning about a cop walking a beat. Well, if a cop's walking a beat, they're not doing something else. And I know that this this police force in Coburg and in Port Hope take great pride in the fact that they're trying to be cost efficient and cost effective. So putting in some cameras, maybe that's one way that they don't have to have an officer walking up and down a particular beat.
Mm-hmm.
But all that being said, what about the issue of privacy?
Exactly. Well, you know, and one of the things you put in your article is the old nothing to hide argument. If you've got nothing to hide, then you shouldn't be worried if you're caught on CCTV. And, you know, there's nothing in the charter, and, you know, and listeners out there know I'm a huge fan of the charter, even though our federal government doesn't seem to support it, I do. And one of the aspects of the charter is this guaranteed right to privacy, the guarantees of an illegal search and surveillance. And that's what CCTV does. I mean, you know, whether or not I have something to hide, what I want to protect is my rights.
Well, I think the nothing to hide argument is really interesting because it's based on the assumption that the targets that these people are always looking at are just criminals and wrongdoers. And they don't really take into account the fact that, it's not just those people. It's everyday people. You and I are walking down the street, or in the case of some of the federal legislation, I know we'll talk about later. You know, coming onto my computer and looking at where I surf and where I make my calls and all that kind of stuff. The other thing is the clandestine way that these people can get a hold of information or you know are watching us. I mean. You know, we go about our business, but we forget that, you know, way up there. And I mean, those cameras are really high.
Mm-hmm.
You don't realize that you're being watched. And you know, I don't know about anybody else, but that kind of gives me the oogies. I mean, you know, why do they need to do this? What is the rationale?
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, it's quite fascinating.
Well, it's a good question, the rationale aspect of it, because we know that crime rates in the country are at a 40-year low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, other than the occasional property crime, which is what break-in enters are, and that's what got these store owners. And by the way, the majority of those store owners did have alarms in place, did have, you know, the appropriate they don't have surveillance cameras in their stores, and maybe that's the issue that they need to focus on if they want to have surveillance. But most of those store owners, they didn't suffer a huge loss. But there is that feeling that you've been violated, right, when you get broken into. So I can understand from their perspective, well, you know, if we'd had that. But, you know, if you're going through your everyday life and that's happened to you once in your life, that you've been violated in such a way, is it just a part of life?
Well, it's interesting because, you know, you were saying earlier, what were the reasons? And I did some homework on this. And back in 2011, when the chief at the time, Chief Sweet, Paul Sweet, was getting the first cameras put in, he gave five reasons as to why we needed the cameras. And he said one is to create a safe environment. The second is to deter or prevent crime.
Mm-hmm.
The third was to assist in the identification of criminals, and the apprehension and prosecution of criminals. The fourth thing was visual evidence, the ability to provide visual evidence to give stronger cases. And then the final thing was to maintain public order. Those were the five reasons that when we got our first cameras in 2011, that was the reasons that he gave.
Well, and if you go through that list, you'll see that really, I mean, you've got five things, but there's really only two things. So the majority of those things can be rolled into one thing, which is law enforcement, the whole law enforcement angle of it.
Yep.
Whether you want to call it keeping people safe, or you want to call it gathering evidence, or being able to survey criminals and their activity, that's all part of the same. So that's one point.
Yep.
And the other point was public what?
Public safety, I was going to say.
Public safety.
Maintaining public order.
Maintaining public order. Oh, okay. So, because we know it's all about law and order, right?
Well, and we, you know, it's interesting how much crime do we have around that locally? I mean, you know, some people might get a bit rowdy on a Friday night or a Saturday night, but is it really that bad that we need these cameras down at the beach and et cetera?
Well, and it goes to the question I asked a little while back there. And, you know, do we have a police force in our town to prevent crime, or do we have a police force in our town to keep the kids in check? And is it easier to keep the kids in check if you got CCTV located in areas, quite frankly, where they're located are areas where the youth congregate, the beach, those areas around the corners there on Swain Street, with, you know, coming in and out of the facilities up there. I mean, for Swain Street, I got to say, I mean, one of the other things that happens on Swain Street, of course, is there's the shelter for women, right? So again, that's the whole weighing. What we're really talking about, though, is not dissimilar to the RIDE program in my mind, where, you know, as a society, we've decided to abrogate our rights, you know, for the better good. We don't have a problem with getting pulled over during a RIDE check because it's for the better good, trying to stop drinking and driving. Is that the mindset that we need to take when it comes to closed circuit television? Then it's for the greater good, so we should be accepting of that.
Okay, well, if you want to make that argument, fair enough then. But one of the things that was in the recent article and has been raised about this is the number of cameras that we have, that there's a need for more cameras. And in fact, Sweet came back in 2012 and had a $91,000 budget to get 12 more cameras.
Well, just so I'm going to let the listeners in on this, because facts about CCTV cameras in Coburg, okay, and this is probably something you've already done the research on, Rob, so we're going to get right to it. Yeah. The original plan called for 12 cameras to be installed in the downtown core. Cameras are to run on a 72-hour cycle and do not require a person to monitor them, even though if you saw the news article, there is someone monitoring them. The footage is kept for 72 hours, but during an investigation, a request can be made by the deputy chief to access footage captured there. Every keystroke or action by monitoring officers is tracked to ensure that the system is being used properly and under internal policies. The town currently has 4 cameras installed in the areas, as you said, Swain, Coburg Beach, Division and King, and King and George Streets. And 2 more cameras are planned to monitor Victoria Park and the lighthouse at the pier. Each camera costs between $10,000 and $12,000 and requires fiber optic lines to connect to the police station. So again, this seems like a lot of money. And as you said, the majority of that cost was borne by the fees that they charge for people who are doing, you know, security checks and things like that.
Well, here's the thing, though. We've got 4 cameras. They want to get another 2. Mm-hmm. Why are we spending the money? If we're going to have a proper system, it was interesting because one of the officers that was interviewed for the story said, you know, we should have just 10 cameras just along the main street alone, just so that they could get all the proper angles and be able to do the job, quote unquote, properly.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, if we're going to make the investment and we want to have this as part of it, and as you say, maybe there's a good argument to be made to say,
I'm just putting that argument there. I'm not willing to abrogate my rights, Rob.
Okay.
I don't even like the RIDE program either. And it was funny because I was talking to one of the fellows who does the Gumbo radio show. He's actually a peace officer in Durham region, and we were talking about this, Pete Fisher and I, and about RIDE and all of this, and my objection to having my civil rights basically violated at the whim of a police officer, and he flashed his badge at me from the other studio saying, hey, watch what you say, you know. Yeah. So again, I'm one of these, you know, call me a wacko, you know, I'm all about the charter, and I believe that, you know, your rights, you know, I mean, once they're taken away, man, they don't come back, you know.
I apologize, Dave, from the bottom of my heart, but I guess what you're making the argument,
I am putting that argument out there.
And that's really important, is to say, you know, maybe people are prepared and that this is part of it. And if it's going to be part of it and we do as a community accept it as being a necessary evil to try and find balance, then let's make sure we get enough of the cameras and let's have it done properly rather than, you know, dribs and drabs, and let's make the expense and do it right.
So your point, if I can just clarify it for the listeners out there, is if we're going to do this, if we're going to have eventually 10 cameras, why are we waiting till eventually? If this is something they see a need for, I mean, we rolled out the first 4 cameras and they were successful. It does beg the question, well, why then would we do it piecemeal? Why wouldn't we just say, okay, well, obviously it works. We need to be able to do this in order to track you know, further information down the street. If someone gets out of the light, out of the sight line of that camera, if there's not another one to pick them up, then you really can't track them. So yeah, what's the point of doing it part of the way or doing it piece by piece by piece? If it's something that we need, then why aren't we doing it completely?
And it may be just a matter of funding. I mean, if mm-hmm. you know, the provincial government is obviously putting in a big chunk of it, and it depends on revenues. But I guess deeper concern is what you were saying, and that is about our rights, our civil rights, mm-hmm. and the charter. And I guess I would ask you is you know, are we giving up too much, or is it worth it? Because if you look at the comments that are being made by downtown business people, by representatives, you know, they're saying it's almost a balance. Yes, we need these, but you know, I know there are privacy issues. Well, can we have our cake and eat it too?
Well, no, exactly. And you know, there's two comments in the paper from October 10th. I don't even think about jumping off the pier into the lake anymore with a camera like there to watch you act in the act of committing a crime. So people are saying, so then they've been sort of dissuaded from doing that, which rightly so. And all the fun has gone out of life. Now they'll be able to see if I overstayed my parking spot within the 1 hour limit was another sort of obviously tongue-in-cheek response. But again, you can see the concern there, even in just those two posts about the ability to go about your life in a way that's a little more carefree. Obviously, when one is under surveillance, I mean, it's the same thing, you know, and I go to my comment when I was talking to Echo Amako about being a person of color. He says the moment he walks into any store, anywhere he walks, he's under surveillance, whether it's from staff or customers watching to see if he's going to steal something. He says it's ridiculous, and it's just because he's a black man. Now, with these new rules, I guess you don't have to be black to be spied upon.
Well, you know? And what where does it go from here?
Mm-hmm.
And I guess that's the other aspect of it is that, you know, maybe I'm only walking down the street, and as we were talking about earlier, if I'm not doing anything wrong, what do I care?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, where do I have privacy anymore?
Exactly.
You know, always somebody watching, always somebody monitoring, always somebody, you know, keeping an eye on what you're doing. And, mm-hmm. you know, we live in a strange world. I was reading a really good piece from the Sunday Observer on the death of privacy and, you know, talking about how so much of our lives now is up for grabs. And in particular, I know we're going to talk about Bill C-13, the cyberbullying bill, which is also becoming a new law enforcement bill. Mm-hmm. Allowing police and the government to access information without warrants or without mm-hmm. Without proper due justice.
Well, and this is a similar bill that was basically crushed in the Commons before, and that was when Vic Taze, I guess, was the justice minister at the time, and he said, you know, well, you're either with us or you're with the pedophiles. Well, now the argument is, well, you're either with us or you're pro-bullying. You know, we're going to get to that in just a moment. We're going to take a few words from some of our sponsors. We'll be right back with more of this. If you have any questions or comments, please feel free to give us a call. I'd love to hear from you.
The new Port Hope Lions Club will have you in stitches and dancing the night away. Starting October 25th, the Mary Janes of Comedy will be appearing in a November 1st, the Halloween Bash with the live band Generations, and also on November 8th, kickoff to the concert series with Marty and the Mojos and a surprise YouTube sensation guest. Become a member of the new Port Hope Lions Club today and get 50% off all show tickets. For details, call Gary Brown at 289-252-2292 or visit porthopelionsclub.com.
Head to the Royal Canadian Legion Branch, 133 in Cobourg, to catch these great events.
Every Thursday is Tall Boy Thursday. Ladies Tuesday happens once a month, and keep your eyes peeled for the meat draw every Friday and Saturday. If you missed any of these events this month, be sure to catch them next month.
The Royal Canadian Legion is at 136 Orr Street in Cobourg. Call 905-372-2231 and become a member today.
A question for David Evans, physiotherapist and co-owner, We Fix You Physiotherapy and Foot Health Centers.
What exactly is a physiotherapist?
Great question, because a lot of people confuse what a physio is between chiropractors and massage therapists. Ideally, what I'll tell you is physiotherapists are university-educated health professionals. We're considered primary health care providers. You don't need a doctor's note to come in and see us. Physiotherapists, we can work with people with heart conditions, breathing conditions, joint pains, neuro problems, seniors, sports injuries. What we do is we bring you in for about an hour an assessment, and we listen to your problems. And then we come up with a diagnosis, and we come up with a treatment that will best suit your condition to get you better as fast as possible.
For more information or to make an appointment with a physiotherapist, contact WeFixU in Coburg or Port Hope, or visit we-fix-u.com.
Community Care Northumberland has been giving strength through caring to the residents of Northumberland County for over 25 years. Experience a higher quality of life with the help of Community Care Northumberland, providing help with meals, making visits to your home, transportation services, palliative care, and more, all coordinated through Community Care Northumberland's 6 area offices. For more information about Community Care Northumberland, visit their website at comcare.ca. That's commcare.ca. Interested in volunteering? Give them a call at 1-866-514-5774. Community Care Northumberland is there for you and your family.
Art enriches our lives. The Art Gallery of Northumberland has been enriching the lives of local residents for nearly 55 years, featuring a collection of over 800 artworks. It's a public art gallery for the people of Northumberland County, presenting stimulating and inviting exhibitions and programming for everyone. The Art Gallery of Northumberland is a charitable organization operating to benefit our community. For more information on the Art Gallery of Northumberland or to make a donation, visit artgalleryofnorthumberland.com.
Listen to us worldwide. Go to northumberland897.ca and select Listen Now, or download our TuneIn app for your mobile.
Bruce Coburn, that's right. Lovers in a Dangerous Time here on your Drive Time. Well, 10 reasons why you should be creeped out by Stephen Harper's anti-privacy agenda. Now, Canadians' privacy is in the spotlight after Harper's controversial pick to be the country's next privacy watchdog arrived on Parliament Hill during a course of critics of the government's latest snooping bill, C-13. 10 things you need to know. C-13 opens the floodgates to telecom companies giving your private information to the government. And guess what? They don't have to tell you about it. You'll never know. Number 2, the bill uses cyberbullying as an excuse to access information on your phones and your computers without a warrant. Number 3, even Amanda Todd's mother thinks the bill goes beyond its stated goal of addressing cyberbullying. Now, you may know Amanda Todd. It's her daughter, Amanda Parsons, Rehtaeh Parsons, I guess. Everyone knows her as Rehtaeh Parsons, who was the victim of cyberbullying. Number four, conservatives are actually trying to make a case for letting police go on phishing expeditions into your phones, computers, just to make sure that you're not up to anything that would make, you know, their spidey senses go off. Number six, the last job of Harper's new pick for the privacy watchdog was to do damage control over intrusions into privacy on a grand scale. Number seven, the guy Harper picked as a privacy watchdog actually used to give advice to Canada's spy network. The selection of the new privacy commissioner was surrounded by really, really dodgy circumstances. New details, meanwhile, on the selection's process are emerging. Sources tell the Globe and Mail that Mr. Tiernan was picked by the Treasury Board's president, Tony Clement, from a two-person shortlist that the candidates favored by many in Canada's privacy community each respected their work as commissioners already and did not make the final shortlist. Anybody who was already on the as a previous commissioner. Number nine, even former privacy watchdogs thinks this is a bizarre choice. And number 10, Canada's spy watchdog thinks that you're stupid. That's right, Canadians are stupid and post far too much information online, a former head of the National Electronic Spy Agency says, leaving the country with long ways to protecting personal information in the internet. And this, of course, is the gentleman who subsequently became the watchdog. Is this really the is this the Patriot Act? Is that what this is? Is this sort of a portion thereof, anyway, of the U.S. Patriot Act?
I would think so. It's shocking, Dave. I mean, did you know in the last year there's been 1.2 million requests for private data made by the government to the telecom companies for our information? 1.2 million. Now, not all those were fulfilled, but there's been that many requests. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know,
are warrantless requests.
These are warrantless requests. These are just asking these telecom companies to provide data about you know what we're doing on the internet, what we're doing on our smartphones, what we're doing on our tablets.
Just and again, you know the old adage: if you're not doing anything wrong, don't worry, they're not watching you. Well, guess what? That's not true. They're watching everybody. The reality is what they're trying to do. I don't know how many of you have you ever watched Person of Interest on television about the guy who builds the machine that can see everything, but they only look for terrorists. Everyone else is considered irrelevant. Yeah. Well, you know what? Here's the thing. And we got a government right now that's willing to take people's passports away and remove people's citizenship at a stroke of a pen. They have the ability to do this now. We've got a government that allows members of caucus to have documents classified without going to the Privy Council. So, again, it does beg the question, is the Patriot Act going to be in the next omnibus budget bill? What do you think about that?
Who knows? But
we're getting drips and drabs here, Rob.
Well, and this bill, it really is – this is the part that is sort of aggravating. It's two bills in one. One is to prevent cyberbullying, and there's a whole number of steps that are reasonable and worthwhile. But what they've done is they've mixed it with sort of a new law enforcement bill to give them all these superpowers over being able to access our private information online. And the sad part about it is both of them have validity if they were separated.
Mm-hmm.
But what they're trying to do is because we get all emotional about cyberbullying and, you know, we all feel very strongly and of course, rightfully so. I mean, it's horrible. We can't debate them separately.
And that is something all the opposition members of the House, I remember Nathan Cullen for the NDP got up. I remember that I think it was Mark Garneau for the Liberals who got up and said, look, just what you said. These are both very interesting, but very different bills, and they should be split up. They should be. And this was before the first vote was held. And Justice Minister McKay said, no. They're not separate bills. They work into one another. One leads to the other. That's why they need to be contained in one piece of legislation. But the opposition wasn't buying it.
No, and not only that, but I mean, there's already, back in 2004, there was a whole number of laws that were passed that started to deal with some of these issues around, you know, digital technology and law enforcement. But what's been interesting, and I mean, I'm just parroting others who are a lot smarter than I am, there hasn't been the same access to information and protection of privacy that's come along at the same time. So we keep getting all this access. We can access all this information. But the Protection of Privacy Act dates back to 1982 and has not been updated.
That's right.
And so what you have is a very unbalanced approach to access to our personal information.
Well, and on the same token, as I said earlier when I mentioned that caucus members can have documents classified now, we now literally have a state, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening out there, we live in a regime now where our government is asking us to trust them implicitly because they know what's best for us. And yet, time after time after time, they introduce legislation that proves that they don't trust us. They don't trust us. So how can we, as regular Canadians, expect to be able to trust a government that, quite frankly, doesn't trust us? I mean, how do you square that circle, Rob?
I don't even want to try. I don't even want to try. But listen, again, you know, people who know more than you and I, Dave, the Ontario Information and Privacy Commissioner, Anne Kevorkian, and the BC Information and Privacy Commissioner, Elizabeth Denham, both of them have said this is not good. The Canadian Bar Association, another worthy organization, is saying this is out of whack. So I think when we start to see those kinds of organizations stepping forward and saying, you know, and people with these kinds of credentials saying this is not a good piece of legislation, and yet 2 weeks ago, without any fanfare, without any notice, the report goes forward and it takes the next legislative step. So, you know, this bill is gaining momentum.
But is this yet another bill that's going to fall to the Supreme Court of Canada, looking at them going, you know what, another poorly constructed bill, another poorly drafted piece of legislation, another piece of legislation where you should have done your homework with regards to the charter and protecting people's freedoms. I mean, I'm all for, quite frankly, you know, giving the police the ability to do whatever it is they need to do to prevent crime. But I'm not all for circumventing my rights in order for them to do that. They need to be able to follow the law. If we're a nation of laws, then it really is incumbent upon the government and the persons who enforce those laws to actually follow those laws. And when a law gets in your way, if you're a criminal, I can understand that being a problem. But if the law gets in your way, if you're a law enforcement officer, then, I mean, do you just circumvent the law or do you just create a new law that allows you to get around that? I mean, if what you're getting around is personal privacy?
Well, again, I'm not a legal expert, but it makes you wonder. I mean, you need to have a warrant to tap a phone. And that's to protect our privacy and our rights. And yet, under this new legislation, there's no need for a warrant. So all of a sudden, I can just go and grab your data and look where have you been surfing and who you sent emails to and what have you been doing on Snapchat or Facebook or on Twitter.
Or even something as simple as where are you? I mean, let's face it, all these smartphones can basically tell anyone where you are if you forget to shut off that part of the phone. You know, I mean, when I have my phone, most people don't know where I am because I haven't activated that portion of my phone. You know, and again, it's a small amount of anonymity, but, you know, in this world, you got to crave and retain what you have, especially with the wide window. I mean, the Americans right now have essentially unfettered access to our data. They've been mining our metadata for years. That's something that the Snowden reports came out with. And this is when, you know, again, prior to Edward Snowden, everyone was kind of just assuming that the government had our best interests at heart and they weren't going to trample all over our rights. And then all of a sudden you get sort of insider information, which a lot of people are discounting. They're calling him a traitor and whatever. But, I mean, is it traitorous of an American citizen to enlighten the citizenry that they're, in fact, not private, that their information isn't personal, that it is being shared?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And you know, the other thing, too, there's all these strange bits to it. I mean, they're expanding the definition of what a public officer is. So, I mean, literally, you know, someone like the local mayor could suddenly want to have access to our information. You know, we're talking earlier about voting and people having fears about, you know, if I go in and make my vote or take my vote and somebody can trace it back to how I voted. That's the kind of stuff that we're talking about under this legislation. That could be possible. Now, whether people would or would not do it remains to be seen. But that's the level of access that we're talking about.
Well, and you know what? You just raised an even scarier point. I mean, you mentioned the local mayor. But anybody who's a notary public, quite frankly, could ultimately, because they're a public servant, they could probably request information and get it.
Yeah, there's so many parts of it that are vague, and again, I'm relying on others who know more than I do. But but you know, they're talking about things like reasonable suspicion. Tell me what that means. You know, what's reasonable suspicion? Well, Dave, I heard you on the radio the other day, and I think you're a reasonably suspicious guy and a guy, and I want to know all about you. So all of a sudden, they're in and they're grabbing your information. You know, they're looking at, you know, all those sites that you visit and all the things you tweet about.
And to get back to you on that, if I go fishing to try and find out, and if I get a lead, all of a sudden that member of parliament or that member of the caucus who has initiated that search can have all that documentation declared classified. So now I don't even have, I mean, even if I was to get an inkling, you know, I mean, you know, we know this. They can go and get your bank account information without a warrant, and the bank's not allowed to tell you this. So, I mean, the fact that they're doing background searches and what have you, again, everyone's like, oh, well, you know, they're only doing it for terrorists, to prevent against terrorism. But you know what? I want to point out, you know, in 1933, when the dissidents were being rounded up in certain Western European countries, it was being these people were being rounded up on the auspices that they may be a threat. They may be a threat. You may have said something that the government didn't find particularly palatable. So next thing you know, you were disappeared. Same thing happened in Chile under Allende. I mean, we now have is that the regime we have in Canada now? I mean, do we have to worry about that? I mean, the ugly word fascism, which, by the way, is being spoken now more openly than ever before, and I think in Canadian history, that we have a government that, quite frankly, through any means possible, is going to shut up dissent, is going to seek out those dissenters, and is going to do everything in their power to discredit and destroy those dissenters. Having access to this information, now, again, you know, I'm coming off as, you know, one of those tinfoil hat-wearing conspiracy theory guys, but every day, listeners, every day, there's more information coming out about what the government is doing and what they're doing supposedly in our best interest, and yet if it's in our best interest, why aren't they willing to share that information?
Well, Dave, you're not in bad company. I mean, there are academics and the British Columbia Civil Liberties Association and the Canadian Civil Liberties Association and the Canadian Access and Privacy Association, the Canadian Institute of Access and Privacy Professionals. I mean, the Open Government Project, the Democracy Watch. There's a list of 30 names, openmedia.ca. Privacy and Access Council, Privacy and Access Council of Canada,
the Council of Canadians,
Public Interest Advocacy Center. All of these organizations say that this legislation is flawed because it's not protecting our rights.
Mm-hmm.
So I know you take the logic a little bit farther, and maybe that makes other people uncomfortable. But obviously, there are some very, very smart people and some very reputable mm-hmm. organizations and individuals who are saying that, you know, we need to be concerned. And I guess coming back to our, you know, our eyes in the sky, you know, maybe it is fine now, the way we feel about it. But what worries me is the future.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, what does it come to that you know, because I've found something on your computer, Dave, and that tweet that you know, you visit all those websites and those tweets that you retweet, you are somebody we need to watch. And then suddenly you walking down the street is not just you walking down the street, but we're keeping an eye on you.
Exactly.
And, you know, that mm-hmm. jaywalking, or we'll just find any reason to pull this guy in. And we'll look after him. And we've seen it already with the federal government mm-hmm. and the way that they're using the Canadian Revenue.
Well, we saw with Mayor Arar, for crying out loud.
Yeah, I mean, well, I was just going to say the CRA and the investigations they're doing on nonprofit or groups. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, we're going to find our quote-unquote enemies, and we're going to go after them, which mm-hmm. is, again, maybe not fascist, but sure sounds Nixonian, if you ask me.
Well, it's definitely Nixonian. I mean, you know, and I'm going to repeat this for the listeners out there who listen to me often enough, but, I mean, if anyone saw the Frost-Nixon debates, there was a part there where David Frost said to the president, but what you were doing was illegal. Are you saying it wasn't illegal, Mr. President? And Nixon said, what I'm saying, David, is that it's not illegal when the president does it. So is Stephen Harper saying that it's not illegal when the Prime Minister does it? It's not illegal when the caucus does it? It may be illegal for you and me. We may go to jail. You know, ABC Corporation might go to jail for spying on their employees. But it's okay when it comes to the government doing it. And there's no justification. It's and again, I'm going to take a stretch. It's a big leap here. But it's like the justification for any military action. Unless you can come up with a concrete reason why, there really is no reason. I mean, war should be the last resort. Spying on your citizens should be the last resort. It is the last resort, definitely, of a desperate government.
Well, and you know, this is I always find this ironic and painfully so, that, you know, these are people who like to parade around with veterans
mm-hmm.
who, you know, gave their friends gave their lives so that we could have the freedoms that everyone wants to cherish so greatly, and yet we spit on it when they'll do it this quickly mm-hmm. with a piece of legislation just so that they can, you know, get a hold of things that are not, in my mind, are not rightfully theirs.
Well, and it's all about getting around the rules, right? I mean, we have right now, and again, you know, this government was huge about 6 years ago. They were big on video piracy. Yep. Oh, video piracy was the bane of Canadian existence. It was so easy. They were getting so much pressure from the American Motion Picture Association because it was so easy to pirate films in Canada, and all of this stuff was going on. And they brought in all this legislation to be tough on pirates. And yet they themselves, this week, or in the last week rather, have said that they want to end censorship by media, which means that they want to have unfettered access to intellectual property by CTV, by Baytown Broadcasting, by Global News, by CBC. They want to have access to those media feeds.
Well, and as a journalist, like I said,
is that not video piracy?
Well, and as a journalist, you know, why are you allowed to use, you know, something that I'm doing totally out of context for your political ends? I don't work for you. I work for the, you know,
exactly,
the people of Canada, and you know, they have no right to take my work and all of a sudden bend it around so that they can use it for their political means. I mean, I'm not hired by them. They're not my employer. That's not why I'm doing
that's
it.
Right.
And that's what's really happening there.
Well, we do have fair use regulations in Canada, and that's why I'm able to go online every day and read the news to you listeners out there, because by me accessing their portals and their websites and providing the information, as long as I acknowledge who the author of the piece is and give proper accreditation, then I can, under the fair use guidelines, read those stories. But if I'm crafting a story about the opposition leader, for instance, being a hunky, you know, male stripper who was only concerned is you know, getting his picture in the paper, and I'm using footage from the news media to tell you that story, then quite frankly, I'm stealing copywritten material. I'm creating something from something else which already exists. You know, it's like taking a song that you love and putting your own words to it and selling that. You can't do that either.
Well, and the tendency always is to take these things out of context. I mean, you know, tell me a time. I can tell you many times as a journalist I've been told, you know, you take something out of context, something that's been said, and yet they'll turn around and happily take our work and use it off in some way that is totally irrelevant. You know, one portion of a quote, 8 or 9 words out of 25 or 30. Mm-hmm. And you know, that is very upsetting.
The only saving grace, I think, for the opposition, and I put this out there to the listeners, is that Stephen Harper has said so many things over the last 20 years that are quite frankly contradictory to what he's doing now. Even Stephen Harper from 2004. I mean, there's a couple of websites out there you can go to, and they're on YouTube, where 2004 Stephen Harper argues with 2014 Stephen Harper.
Yeah.
And those are news clips. So how difficult is it going to be for the opposition to find news clips that aren't quite as beautifying, if you will, of Stephen Harper? I mean, there's a guy who said publicly on more than one occasion that the biggest threat to Canadian democracy is our charter.
Well, but
you know, I mean, he says this publicly. Is that an attack ad waiting to be written then,
well,
Rob?
I don't know about that, but I can certainly say that what comes out of this, and we really haven't gone that far in the logic yet, is that when the media suddenly becomes a potential gathering tool for the government, then all of a sudden, who wants to talk? Again, it's another reason not to talk to the media.
Right.
And already, you know, it's difficult enough now to get interviews, to get people to come on. You know, it's so hard to penetrate the walls that sometimes exist because people don't want to be interviewed. Well, now let's give them another reason not to cooperate with the media or to want to control the messages.
Absolutely.
And you know, that goes right to the heart of the freedom of the press. And that is very, very disturbing.
Well, and a shining example was the announcement today with regards to Heritage Canada and the amount of money they're spending on advertising for Canada's 150th birthday. So in the story, there's a lovely picture of Shelley Glover, the Minister of Heritage, and they talk about this. But it's not her they interviewed. It was a spokesperson who provided the comment. They didn't even get access to the Heritage Minister to do a story on the Heritage Ministry. They got a spokesperson who, quite frankly, is speaking from the PMO. It's every time you have, whether it's a spokesperson for Health Canada or a spokesperson for Heritage or a spokesperson for the environment, it's always a spokesperson. Well, who chooses those spokespeople? It's not the minister. I can guarantee you that. It's somebody from the PMO.
In the United States, there are eight public relations people to every journalist. I lay awake at night fearing what it is here in Canada, the ratio. We're just outnumbered and outgunned. I mean, to try and get information now, and everybody, it's so funny that people want to have questions emailed to them. And I tell my students all the time, you know, who answers? How do you know it's the person that you've emailed? You know, you could email the minister and you get these responses back. Are you to assume that it was the minister that actually took time out of their schedule to mail you back? No, it's some flunky that they're given the job to get these answers back. And it's always, you know, the subtlety of what's being said. I mean, that's the joy, as you know, with live radio.
Well, and the other
joy is to be able to get the answers spontaneously.
And what you try to do, and especially in situations where you're getting canned responses, is, okay, here's your canned response. Now let's try and find out what they're not telling you. Let's parse out this canned response and see, you know, where they were thought they were going too far, and then they backpedaled a little bit on that answer. And that's what you get a lot of.
Yeah.
You know, that's why, as you say, I love the one-on-one. I love to be able to have – I don't do scripted questions. You know, even when I do my Kojiko shows, a lot of people have said that to me. I can't believe you get them to say what they say. Obviously, they don't want you to ask them those questions. And it's true. They don't. You know, I show up at the studio. They've got a list of questions that they'd like, or topics, if you will. Not questions, but topics they'd like to talk about. I look at them. And if I think that they're particularly important, you know, and generally we do get through the topics, but we do talk about other things. I don't know how many of you saw the last interview I did with Rick Norlock, where I was talking about the incursion with regards to ISIS. And he said, you know, it's an intervention. Say, well, you know, normally when I think of interventions, I think of, you know, alcoholics or drug addicts or you know, somebody like that. I don't think of, you know, a religious sect when we're thinking about an intervention. It's just, maybe that's the way my mind works. You know, one of the things you and I were talking about during the break was the fact that we're going to see smaller countries. You know, is Iraq going to be broken up into a Sunni state, a Shia state, a Kurdistan to the north? Is Turkey going to be split up? Because it seems to me the goal of ISIS, at least from the media spin, and again, you know, you got to take it with a grain of salt, is that they ultimately want to recreate, if you will, the Ottoman Empire. Because if you look at the region of the world and you look at where the strife is, especially with Turkey trying to hold the end, I mean, let's face it, that is the Ottoman Empire, that whole region. So are we seeing a rebirth then of that caliphate? And is that really what we're fighting? Or are we simply just fighting a war because we can't sell Big Macs and a Coca-Cola in downtown Beirut? You know, so those are things for folks to think about. Getting back to what we're talking about today, however, weird segue there. Thanks, by the way. Eye in the sky. I would really be interested to know how many listeners out there are concerned about that. I mean, I understand, you know, the whole if you're not doing anything wrong, you don't have to worry about it. But you really do. You really do. Because as I said, you know, it starts with simple things like that. Next thing you know, they're rounding up dissidents. I mean, really, it's not a big leap.
But you know what? The hard part is, and you were making this, and you were making part of these points earlier, which I think are really valid, and that is, you know, maybe we are prepared to give up a little bit of our privacy for the greater good. And the other thing, too, is, and this is seminal, I mentioned in my column, is that, you know, we've got a police chief who brought in an increase of 0.9%. on the police budget. I mean, I've never in 30 years of being a journalist in this town ever seen a budget come in that low. Mm-hmm. And I think part of the reason is that, you know, he finds ways to allocate resources. And, you know, we had a candidate on here before me who's talking about taxes, and, you know, this people get really up in arms. But, you know, if we want, you know, how do we patrol? How do we monitor these things? I mean, you know, you were saying earlier, Swain Street, there are certain elements that go and that it's a problem. And, mm-hmm. you know, the beach is another one. Do we want officers there, live people, or is it better, cheaper, more efficient with the camera?
I don't know. Well, we have a caller.
Go ahead, caller. You're online.
How you doing?
I'm doing well. Ed, you're calling back. Welcome back to the show.
Yes, really.
I do have thousands of listeners, by the way, and it's not just
Ed. I understand that. They just can't dial the phone.
Not fast enough. What's your question or comment?
Well, what I was going to say about these cameras is all the time in the paper you see police are looking for this suspect. Police are, you know, like you get lousy pictures of people with hoodies on that you can't see who the heck they are, the back of their head or something like that. So, I mean, if you're looking at this camera and the cop's going, oh, that's Bob, you know, he broke the window. That's great, but you know how do they identify these people?
No, that's a good point.
Somebody's coming through town and they come off the 401 and they break into some store and away they go, what good is the camera?
No, true enough. Well, the last rash of break-ins we had through Port Hope and Coburg was actually, they believe, a crew of people coming from Oshawa. And I got to say, when my store was broken into, when the human being got broken into, when I think we were open for about a year when we got broken into. The police came after many calls. They didn't come immediately. They came begrudgingly, actually. And they came out, and they looked it over, and they went, oh, we know who did this. And we're like, oh, you already know who did it. He go, oh, yeah, he just got out of juvie last week. So they knew. They were like, he just got out. This is his M.O. We knew it was him. Oh,
yeah,
okay. I never heard anything, though. I don't know whether he was arrested. I don't know whether anything else ever came of it. I just know my store was broken into.
Yeah, I... I've had a couple issues as well.
So, and I think that's to the point you're trying to make, right? I mean, here they are, even if they know who they are, what's going to come of it?
What's going to come of it? Yeah, so you spend all this money, and, you know, there are certain times, you know, like you don't think about, you know, if you do something silly or you get kids when spring comes out and they just jump up in the air and yell or something, you know. And
next thing you know, there's a broken window, right?
Well, no, what I was more going to say is, you know, sometimes, you know, people do silly things.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think you're under surveillance all the time, it takes a little way of impromptu, you know.
Foolery.
Tomfoolery, right. Yeah, really, you know, something silly.
Well, that was what was one of the comments from the letters to the editor, basically said, oh, well, you know, if I was ever going to jump off the Coburg Pier, I'm not going to do it now. I don't want to do it on TV and be caught doing a crime.
Oh, I mean, hasn't that been a rite of passage in this town for forever is, you know, you jump off the pier. Now, you know, they talk about not wanting to have a cop walk down the street, yet they're going to have cameras trained to catch kids jumping off the pier. I mean, really, is that where you want your money spent?
That's a good question. It's a very good question. I appreciate you calling it.
All right.
Thanks a lot. So, again, you know, that goes to the point of, you know, the prevention aspect of the cameras. That was one of the arguments that Paul Sweet made. We'll put these cameras in and it may actually dissuade people from performing illegal acts. Now, one of the issues that did come up, especially at Division and King there, is about 5 years ago maybe, there was sort of a burgeoning thing where young women were on the corner and they were being met. Now, I think it had something to do with arranged dates, you know, we'll pick you up on the corner here and then, you know, they get dropped. But basically, it was a form of prostitution, right? So that was something. And of course, once the cameras were installed, that disappeared.
Again,
you know, there's the two sides to it, right?
And I think that's really important to remember is you know, I mean, we've been arguing a lot for civil liberties. But, I mean, if they didn't work, we wouldn't be doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So there has to be some benefit to it. And there has to be, and there is a rationale. It's too bad the Chiefs weren't on because it would have been nice to hear them speak directly about why the logic that they have for doing it and probably more accurately reflect point of view.
No, that's a good point. I want to thank you for coming in again today, Rob. We will see you next week, I hope, for another episode of Consider This. And I'm going to still send out my olive branch to the chiefs of police here locally and see if they want to get on and come on and talk about these particular situations with regards to CCTV or any other additions to the law enforcement quiver, if you will.
Indeed.
That will allow them to do that. Anyway, it'd be a great opportunity to do that. I am out of here. I want to thank you for tuning in. Coming up next, Dave Hayes and Wendy Bellin. That's right. You know who it is. It's Cedar Rail.
Northumberland 89.7 is CFWN, truly local radio, serving Northumberland County, a not-for-profit volunteer community radio